knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight.
I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys.
Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot is... Okay, so here's the deal.
Okay.
I have a history in the past of every now and again just being like, ah, fuck it, and then shaving my head.
Yes, that's true.
And I had a moment like that the other night. And I was very close.
Oh, yeah.
To shaving all my hair off. But
why?
Then, what?
Just any particular reason?
It never really has a reason. It's just kind of like, it feels like it's time.
Yeah, that's fair.
I do enjoy having a bald head. It feels kind of good. Mm. When you take a shower, the water hitting your bald head feels really good.
I bet that does feel really good.
It just rolls off you.
Never felt it before.
Oh,
but I got
so
it.
Good.
I've got about 4 years left where I have the choice.
Look forward to it once that happens. But then I had this moment in advance of shaving my head that I usually have after the fact. And that is I remembered that I really like the front and top of my head bald, but the back is a disaster.
Ooh,
I got those rolls on the back of my head.
Oh, you got that thing. Yeah. Okay.
And it's
all right.
Really hard to shave that.
Sure, of course.
It's just I realized that and I'm like, yeah, the allure of this is not as good as the reality. So I'm going to make an appointment to go get a haircut. And I think it's a bright spot because it's progress.
Yeah.
Like in the past, I would have just barreled in and buzzed.
That's true.
But this time I thought about it and realized, no, the back of my head does exist.
Wow, when hindsight being 2020 turns into foresight 2020, that's a victory of epic proportions, right?
I'm Dan and this is 2020.
God damn it.
So what's your bright spot?
My bright spot is I found Jamie Loftus's new podcast, Ghost Church.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. It's, it's about that single person point of view nonfiction kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's really enjoyable. I wish it was about Cactus Tony, of course.
Sure.
The
long story.
Yeah, the greatest example of the format.
Uh-huh.
But it is very
for
good.
Sure.
And it's about that spiritualism era right now that I've always found incredibly fascinating whenever so many fucking mediums were going around like it's fine. Like they were just like, yeah, let's do this. It's crazy.
Well, I'll have to give that a check out. Sounds good.
It is interesting, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jordan, today we have a not-so-awesome episode
yeah,
to go over.
Yeah, I kind of figured that.
This is one of the most discordant episodes of Alex's show I've heard in a long time.
Interesting.
It makes absolutely no sense. And if anything is to be taken seriously, it is deeply, deeply disturbing.
There we go.
And we'll get into that. But before we do, let's say hello to some new wonks.
That's a great idea.
So first, Una Llama Bomber. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
So if I understand correctly, that means like universities, airports,
and
llamas.
Yeah.
Bombing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Next, hearing Roger Stone's orgy janitor made me say gross out loud while washing dishes. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, a little snacky for me. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Andy in Kansas, even though I'm not Andy, nor have I ever been to Kansas. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And this guy sounds like a smooth jazz cat. Gary Piano, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
We got a couple of technocrats up in the mix here. So first, Jay, also happy belated birthday.
Sure.
I think we might a little bit behind.
Don't worry about
it. Hey, Jay.
Happy birthday,
brah. Next, also a shout out to all my gay frogs and trans rights or human rights. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk. I have risen above my enemies. I might quit tomorrow, actually. I'm just going to take a little breaky now. A little breaky for me. And then we're going to come back, and I'm going to start the show over. But I'm the devil. I got to be taken off here. I'm doing all this. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. Fuck you. I got plenty of words for you, but at the end of the day, fuck you and your New World Order, and fuck the horse you rode in on, and all your shit.
Maybe today should be my last broadcast. I mean, maybe I'll just be gone a month, maybe 5 years. Maybe I'll walk out of here tomorrow, and you never see me again. That's really what I want to do. I never want to come back here again. I apologize to the crew and the listeners yesterday that I was legitimately having breakdowns on air. I'll be better tomorrow.
He's not.
Oh.
Boy, is he not.
I was really thinking today was going to be the day.
Ugh. Nope.
Shit.
So today we're going to be going over April 25th, 2022. That's Monday to you.
All right. That one actually works.
This was upsetting. This was a disturbing episode, mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I texted you and I was like, maybe we need to do a Tuesday episode.
Yeah.
That's how absurd this was. About 10 minutes into the episode, I was like, worried.
Okay, you are worried.
It's not a common experience that I have.
Yeah.
It was a very different vibe than I'm mm-hmm. used to. And I think you'll feel it as we go. But here is where the episode starts.
Something hit me last night and this morning while I was reading all the news and looking at the research. And it's something we really talked about quite a bit here on air in the past, but we're now here. And I really think I should take today out to really thank you all and to tell you that I really appreciate you, because we could be off the air at any moment. You could be plunged into a massive power outage that will be the beginning of martial law.
Cool.
And we will be in the next phase of the New World Order, the purposeful collapse of civilization.
Sure.
And massive, at least 90% depopulation in the next 8 years.
That's fast.
They're actually doing it. It's actually happening. And just to chronicle all the attacks they're running right now would take the 4-hour show. We're going to hit a lot of them. But as I look at all this incredibly important news, that is the most important. And
well,
we have all the pieces. I know exactly what's going to happen. The only question is, what is the timetable? I think you know what's happening as well.
So there's a real sense of a vibe that he's kind of saying goodbye.
Yeah, there is definitely that.
There is a different vibe to this than a lot of times that he talks doom.
Yeah.
There is a subdued, kind of measured presentation to this.
Yeah.
It creeped me out.
I mean, it does seem like the normal outburst of how we're all going to die comes from whenever he's having a bad day and has lost in some fashion,
right.
Usually in the court system.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like he's saying goodbye through this medium of dance, I suppose.
I have a working theory that is Alex realized that maybe this bankruptcy thing isn't going to work. And that maybe the fact that the U.S. trustees have written this letter
right.
of objection to his use of the bankruptcy system, this could trigger some kind of examination of his use of bankruptcy, which could lead to even more trouble.
Well, I mean, when you start to say the words criminal fraud,
I don't know what the standards of that are.
I don't either.
I don't have any kind of like inside information on this or anything, but it just feels like my theory is that this is Alex being like, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done everything I can. It was my last Hail Mary. I'm fucked.
Right. Right, right.
That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying the words criminal fraud, but we're in the ballpark where you should start to think about them. And that's trouble.
There are insinuations and hints of
it.
Yeah. And it just like this beginning stretch of the episode, boy, howdy.
There's that great song with Elvis
okay.
where he talks about, baby, have I ever told you how much I really loved you? And he goes on to say that you were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. And I've told the listeners how much I love you and appreciate you in the great historic battle we've been through. We tried to stop them initiating this final phase. And we'd have a good chance going into this dark night to be able to beat them in the long run. But I really need to just, I'll still continue on as long as possible. Might be a month, might be 2 years. But you need to get ready, and you need to get your family ready. And I've really been holding off telling you all this, but I think you already know. But everything you see, everything standing, everything that's been here is going to be gone. They really intend to kill 90% of us. And when it dawns on the left and the quislings that have gone along with it, it'll be too late for them and too late for us. So just get right with God. I'm going to try to lay all this out today, but there's no doubt now.
Okay, so this is bad. This is some bad news.
Here's what I couldn't get out of my head. I couldn't get out of my head whenever NBC took the Tonight Show from Conan. Mm-hmm. I was like, what if this was Conan's final monologue?
God, it'd be awesome. Instead of that, like, just, great speech about not giving in to cynicism.
Speech that was so heartfelt and beautiful. Yeah. Instead, he was just like, listen, they took this show from me. They're going to take everything from you.
Right.
NBC is going to kill all of us. 90% of you will be dead tomorrow.
Everything that is here will be gone. The monuments we built to the past will crumble and be taken over by Ivy.
Andy Richter's just like, yep, that sounds right. Yep, good work, buddy.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun. This is just fucked up. I mean, this is unacceptable on any level. There's the sort of presentation of it, like you got to prepare your family.
Sure.
Shit's going down.
Right.
No matter what, this is happening. Next 8 years, 90% of everybody's going to be dead. And like, there is a really constant sense at the beginning of this episode that, like, this can't be stopped. There's nothing we can do.
Great.
I really care about this crew, and I care about all of you, and I care about my family. And I just have a really sad feeling that we didn't stop this, but we did the best job we could. They are dismantling every facet of civilization. The third world is completely collapsed. Hundreds of millions are on their way now to Europe and the United States and North America.
What?
Mexico will completely collapse. We will collapse, just like the blue cities.
We're doing fine.
The power grid will start failing. And the public will beg for stability, and that will cement the massive tyranny you already see happening in China.
Yeah, I mean, this is extreme and nonsensical. But, I mean, there are some similarities to, like, what a lot of people believe will happen to climate refugees.
Yeah.
The ways that some areas are going to become uninhabitable mm-hmm. is just a reality of how things are trending.
Yep.
And there are going to be massive inflows of refugees. Alex is pretending that they are used as a weapon by the globalists.
Right.
As opposed to
being forcibly displaced by them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, not by the globalists.
Not by the globalists.
By climate change.
Yeah.
So Alex is kind of weaponizing a potential real issue that we're going to be dealing with in mm-hmm. the future. And that's pretty insidious. That's pretty nefarious.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to argue with a prediction that things are going to get bad mm-hmm. right now.
Right.
It does seem impossible for you to, like, listen to look at the IPCC reports where scientists are getting are waxing philosophical about what it would be like to live on a planet that functions,
mm-hmm.
And then see Biden being like, "Well, I mean, yeah, drilling is great, mm-hmm. But." Not this way. Not this way.
No.
Not how it's going to go.
No. So, look, it's been great knowing you, audience. Quote Alex.
I just need to take this opportunity today to tell you what's coming. And also, I really just feel like talking about how great it's been to know all of you. And just in case we're off the air next week or next month, because it's that close. All the stops have been pulled out. And we have a puppet president that takes direction on television from the Easter Bunny. And that's not a joke. That's very serious.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite serious.
Very serious. Very serious.
Right. Deadly. Did you know that the globalists are run by the Easter Bunny?
I actually did not know that, mm-hmm. but I've always suspected. And to feel right now, mm-hmm. it's amazing.
Right. I mean, like, obviously, maybe the person who was in the Easter Bunny suit at the White House's celebration wasn't a random person who plays an Easter Bunny. maybe that was like a Secret Service agent or something.
Nope.
You wouldn't probably want a random person in an Easter Bunny suit
Easter Bunny
next to the president.
Craigslist Easter Bunny. Let's get him in here. We don't have any internal Easter Bunnies.
Right, right.
And there's no way to get a suit on such short notice,
God,
Dan.
It's just not the same if it's an agent portraying the Easter Bunny.
No, it's
you
not.
Need a professional in that suit.
All those kids will be sad.
So yeah, I this is just nonsense. But we've heard Alex say stuff like that, though, the like it's been good to know you and things like that in the past. But I really do need to stress how different this feels.
This is dark.
And the idea that they've pulled out all the stops and we could be gone in a week. A lot of that feels like all of my attempts to put off the inevitable have failed.
That is kind
essentially
of...
all of my moves are gone. I'm in checkmate.
Right. It does feel like he is admitting that out loud.
That, I mean, obviously, you know, it would be tough to prove definitively.
Sure.
It certainly fits, like, this subtext fits
right.
what's going on in the larger sense of
right.
his world.
Which we could be reading too much into, as we have in the past.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But this is a fucked up episode.
This really does seem fucked up.
Yeah. So anyway, everyone's going to camps.
The sheep-like public, when everything is taken from them, will turn into complete monsters. And if they're told, hey, go along with putting 100 million Americans in camps, they'll do it.
We will.
And so, my God, what have we done? What have we become? I mean, all over the country, they're trying to pass laws to kill babies after they're born. I mean, we're run by evil. We're the bad guys. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us. Infowars.com, chronicling the apocalypse. Stay with us.
Ooh, new tagline.
Man.
No longer tomorrow's news today. Now we're chronicling
the apocalypse.
Yep.
Pirate radio from Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. I think that's good branding.
I think it's so much easier to feel morally superior to your enemies whenever you have them fictionally writing laws to just murder babies.
Right.
That's great.
True.
Like, you know, like in a nuanced world, I have to wrestle with sometimes, you know, it's like, what would I do in their shoes? Would I be, you know, a person who, if he obtained billions of dollars, would go mad with power mm-hmm. and buy Twitter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That one's pretty easy, though. He's monster.
Sure.
He's
monster.
Yeah. Anyways, it's way better. It's way better than real problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just kind of an offshoot of his whole thing, where it's like really easy to be better than your enemy when your enemy is the fucking devil.
Yeah. Yep. And it's imaginary.
Yeah. I am but a fallen vessel, but compare me to the devil and I am so great. All right, whatever.
Yeah. And whenever your enemy compliments you, it's like when you're playing...
The devil respects
you. Yeah, absolutely.
A great deal.
Every time I've played white against myself playing black, mm-hmm. I tell myself I'm the best player there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody could beat me across the table if it's me.
So that's all like the beginning segment
right.
of the episode. And now he comes back into the show proper, because a lot of that's not actually broadcast on the radio. You know, that's that,
right.
that no man's land
right,
segment.
Right.
So here we come into the actual show.
It's a live emergency broadcast, live Monday emergency broadcast. An international cult of transhumanist environmentalist terrorists are sabotaging civilization. Tune in and learn how to stop them. InfoWars has confirmed that a multinational authoritarian cult is actively attacking every facet of the planet's supply chain. The Davos Group is the mouthpiece of this psychotic, multinational, corporate-backed post-humanist revolution. I think you now realize that when I would read out of Club of Rome and UN documents and Operation Lockstep from the Rockefeller Foundation and British Ministry of Defense reports where they predicted, because they were laying all this out, this would be unfolding by the year 2020. Now we're 2+ years into it, that I wasn't making it up and I wasn't exaggerating, and they weren't playing games.
So the first thing to point out here is that this headline is a farce. InfoWars hasn't confirmed shit, yet they're running a headline as if they're doing some real reporting here. This is just shit-talking being presented as fact delivery. Second, none of the documents that Alex is referencing at the end there have anything to do with backing up his claims. Operation Lockstep isn't a real thing. In that document from the Rockefeller Foundation exercise, the pandemic that's involved in the lockstep scenario, it begins in 2012. The depiction of the situation that, you know, this imagined future involves, it does extend to 2026, where the last event mentioned is protesters in Nigeria overthrowing their government. Along the way, the document explicitly mentions some fictional things that never happened, which, Alex, I'd love to hear him explain.
Sure.
For instance, in 2013, cellular networks completely crash. Or in 2017, quote, Italy addresses immigrant caregiver gap with robots.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. So, Alex, explain the prognosticating wizardry
of
this.
Yeah. And so, explain why it was just Italy who did that. We need robot caregivers, too.
Well, I mean, it's not a complete sketch of the world. It's
That's
just
true.
Sort of a little blurb.
That's true.
So we've been over this, but it always needs to be called out that Alex is maliciously lying and making things up about a scenario exercise about technological advancement in the developing world. So it will work better as a thing to scare his listeners with. It's bullshit, and his behavior is inexcusable.
Yep.
The Club of Rome document he's talking about is Limits to Growth, which I know because it's literally the only Club of Rome publication he's ever mentioned. Limits to Growth was written in 1972, and I'm certain Alex has never read it, because it's a very detailed breakdown of various factors that the authors believed would be contributors to limiting the carrying capacity of the planet. These involve things like pollution, but they also touch on the total amount of arable land versus demand for food, and like things like known quantities of finite resources versus the increasing demand as population goes up. In each case, they have estimates for the points at which these lines intersect on a graph, but they're also very clear that these are based on trends continuing and that some of the factors aren't even predictable.
Right.
Even so, they conclude that without any major changes, we'll hit a resource crunch within 100 years, or by 2072. Alex is just making up that they predicted that the crisis would be in 2020 because it better suits his purposes now, but it has no connection to reality. Another book on this kind of theme that Alex might be referencing is Paul Ehrlich's 1968 Population Bomb, but that wasn't affiliated with the Club of Rome. That book brings up some valid points, but a number of the predictions in it were not good. Still, none of them involved 2020. Ehrlich thought doom was coming by the 1980s.
Ah.
Alex is casually referencing these documents to give his career full of failed doomsday predictions the appearance of being something researched and scholarly. This shit he's saying means nothing. He's just trying to trick the audience into thinking there's more behind his words than just some idiot's imagination, which is really all that's going on.
Yeah.
And, of course, prophetic dreams he's had and weird visions.
Yeah, we really don't deal enough with how much it may just be a dream that he's telling us all the time. Mm-hmm. And then he finds some random ass document that somebody is like, that sounds close enough to a dream I had.
A dream informed by growing up in a John Birch Society household where he read these fucked up books at like age 12 and then just internalized them into his worldview.
Yeah.
And now he pretends he was a Satanist and all this bullshit.
Yeah. There's really only two ways to go from that childhood, right? There was serial killer and then InfoWars, and everybody had already done serial killer, so he was like, I suppose I'll just do the InfoWars.
Well, I guess there's another way to go. Therapy.
Oh!
Anyway.
Never even considered it, Dan.
Look, all this shit that Alex was saying in the first segment.
Uh-huh.
It carries over.
Oh, boy.
So there's a couple things we need to get out of the way here. The collapse that has been initiated is now irreversible. The word is irreversible. There's no putting the genie back in the bottle. Now, it could be 10 or 20 times worse if they get what they're actually looking for. And we're talking 6 billion plus dead by 2030. That's the official plan. And they don't have Noah Harari and Klaus Schwab and the Wall Street Journal and New York Times saying, looking forward to the end of humanity. They don't have people set themselves on fire in front of the Supreme Court building calling for an end to fossil fuels. Of course, they had to use fossil fuels to do it. Isn't
oh my
there irony
God.
To that? They're
That's...
not doing all of this to play games.
All right. Well, I guess Alex can just wrap it up then. Just close up shop. If the goal was to stop the globalists and now the whole thing can't be stopped, he's failed and he should go home and tend to his hopefully miserable life.
Yeah.
Fuck this dude.
Yeah.
He's useless now.
Yeah, go away.
Also, looking forward to the end of humanity was an op-ed that actually makes the opposite point that Alex thinks it does because he's only read the headline. And Yuval Noah Harari is a historian and futurist that Alex has recently decided that he's going to pretend is the globalist soothsayer. If I had to guess, this is because Ray Kurzweil hasn't said anything weird in a while, so Alex had to find a new character to fill that gap.
Yeah.
Win Bruce was the name of the man who self-immolated in front of the Supreme Court building recently, hoping to bring attention to the climate crisis. Though he was passionate about climate change, Bruce's action has nothing to do with Klaus Schwab or the globalists. It's a desperate act meant to bring into focus the severity of the issues that he cares about. He's not the only person to do this, even if you exclude all of the cases of protest outside the United States. For instance, David Buckle died by self-immolation as a protest about the climate in 2018. This is basically Alex's way of not taking Bruce's action seriously by pretending it's part of some grand conspiracy and then by making a glib joke about how his self-immolation requires fossil fuels. Alex is doing this because on some level he can't even imagine having the conviction about something it would take to self-immolate to protest a serious cause. Because he's just pretending.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
Yeah, he should not even be allowed to speak of that.
No, I think it's pretty poor taste.
Yeah.
But I guess this whole globalist thing can't be stopped now and everyone's going to die. I mean, it's a real shame.
Yeah, I'm confused.
We had a good run.
Yeah, like, let's just chill then, you know? I mean, if it's irreversible, I'm confused as to why he's so sad.
Well, I guess the only argument is that he's saying that it could be 20 times worse, which implies that by some action, it could be 20 times less bad.
Okay.
So I guess we only have hundreds of millions dying or something.
Yeah, okay.
But the honestly, I really think that this line of rhetoric is pretty dangerous because I think that there's really only a couple directions you can go with it. The first is doomsday prepping and maybe you and your family run to the woods.
There will only be
lone
survivors.
Sure. I think that that's a unwise decision for most people.
Probably.
Maybe some people could pull it off and have a nice life out in the woods.
Maybe they'll be happier.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that by and large, it's probably irresponsible to give this advice to your audience.
Frankly, terrible idea.
The second thing, I think you could lead people to a state of real terror, and maybe they would consider ending their life because what's coming could be something so horrible.
I saw The Mist. Remember whenever the guy...
I didn't see The Mist.
Oh,
played Mist.
Nah. No, there's that famous ending. I might not be right with the title, but the famous ending is the guy is with his family in the truck, and he kills his wife and daughter to save them from the horrors, and he's about to kill himself. The Mist parts, and he can see people coming towards him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like... Oh, fuck, man. 5 minutes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or like, you hear stuff about people taking the War of the Worlds seriously when it was on the radio.
Sure.
And, you know, like, you could see some people in Alex's audience, if they take it seriously enough, could reach despair.
Sure.
Second or third, you could end up with people who are just like, well, I got to gung-ho support Alex, which is just a dead end.
Yeah.
And then the other alternative is like, well, if the globalist plans are unstoppable, I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
My life is already over.
Mm-hmm.
If I can do something that will possibly make less people die, why would I not engage in a suicide bombing against the World Economic Forum or something like that? Why wouldn't you do that if the globalists are going to kill off billions of people within the next 8 years? It's unstoppable, the plans that they've put in place. The information war, quite frankly, has no more purpose.
Nope.
There is no reason to be engaging in politics. There is no reason to be engaging even in culture stuff, really.
Why would you? What does it matter?
It's
if
done.
Why would you care if it's like, oh, gay marriage? We're all dead, man.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing here? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, of course.
Yeah, I don't understand how you can be really concerned with the imagination of slow erosion of civilization when it's a couple years left and then the globalists are going to kill everybody off. It is an excuse for people in the audience to carry out violent action.
Absolutely.
If they are so inclined.
And Alex is a person who does believe the TV is talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he should be very understanding of what people in his audience who might believe that he's speaking directly to them think.
Right, but he also is deeply invested in not taking responsibility for anything, so...
That's fair.
You know, obviously this would be turned around to be like, why would anyone actually listen to me?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
It's just fucked up and so irresponsible, and everyone's gonna die.
They decided that the public is dumb and lazy and weak and aimless, and the decision has been made to kill you and me and my family and your family. And this issue is the only political, economic, cultural issue. And, of course, it's spiritual in nature. It's a battle between good versus evil.
So, yeah, everyone's going to die. It's good versus evil.
I mean, you know, I know nobody listens to his show. That's important, you know, like Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan. They don't actually listen to his show.
Probably not.
Right. Because if you're listening to this shit, wouldn't you need some explanation from Alex?
Why? Wouldn't you need some explanation for why you're supporting it?
Yeah, exactly, right? Wouldn't you be like, wait.
Yeah. Be like, hey, Alex Jones is right about stuff, but I should also be clear that I do not believe it when he says that everyone's going to die. 90%
of the population is going to die within 8 years.
And everybody needs to get right with God, and
yeah,
he has prophetic vision.
That one might be a little far.
Yeah, you'd think that you'd maybe couch some of your commentary about how he's right about most stuff.
I mean, now it does seem like Joe would have to come out and be like, hey, listen, Alex says we're all going to die in 8 years. So, since I believe Alex has been right about things the whole fucking time,
right,
we all have to go do shit now.
Right.
And he's not going to do
it. Alex fucking believes that all these people actually believe him. And then, like, okay... Look, the amount of money that Elon Musk has, for instance, Alex also has been saying that Elon Musk really believes in him and he's fighting the globalists and he's on Team Alex, you know, all this.
Yeah.
So the money that Joe Rogan and Elon Musk have, they could get him out of trouble in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Nope.
And you got to wonder why that is.
Well,
and it's because... It's fun to signal that you believe that Alex is right, but when the rubber meets the road, no one gives a shit about him, and they don't actually believe this stuff.
Nope.
Because he's a madman yelling nonsense.
Yeah. Why is Alex looking for $2 million from his audience if Elon Musk, 100% behind the movement, would give him the amount... If he gave him $2 million, that's
you
what?
You wouldn't feel it.
That is less than a penny to him.
Yeah. And like, if it were... legitimately, and anybody believed that it was a matter of life and death that Alex be on the air,
yeah,
it would be so easy for him to raise this money from these right-wing ding-dongs.
Absolutely.
And people he associates with.
Yep.
It's just horse shit.
Yep.
Anyway, we got some news.
And I told you 2+ years ago they would start environmental lockdowns once you were trained to live under the viral lockdown, and now India and Italy have announced... lockdowns, rationing, electricity only certain times of day to, quote, save the earth. And because, quote, the resources have been cut off from COVID, which wasn't COVID, but was the globalists using that as the pretext to destroy the global infrastructure.
The situations in India and Italy are far more complicated than Alex is reporting them, because he has no idea what he's talking about, and he's just skimmed a headline as now trying to make up what he thinks these articles are about so he can jam them into his narratives.
Sure.
Let's start with Italy. Alex is exaggerating an amendment to an Italian government energy decree that hasn't been fully vetted by the parliament yet. If it passes, it would require that in the summer you not have your AC set lower than 25 degrees Celsius, and in the winter you can't set your heat above 21 degrees Celsius.
Oh, man, that's really going to fuck up those robot caregivers.
It's true. This is not a climate-related issue, nor is it even connected to COVID. It has to do with a sharp drop in gas supplies in Italy that comes from not dealing with Russia. 40% of Italian oil comes from Russia, so there's a considerable hit that they're taking, but they're trying to find ways to make this work. The temperature decrees are one such effort, although I don't believe for a second that there will be a way that they could make this enforceable at all. But as a way to make up for the lost imports also, they're trying to cut new deals with the Republic of Congo and Angola to try and find some more resources.
Sure.
As for India, Alex doesn't even flash up a headline on screen with that one or cite a source, so I'm kind of left to my own devices to figure out what he's talking about. Last October, there was a big deal with Indian power plants saying that they only had an average of 4 days' worth of coal in stock, which was due to a much larger constellation of influences than just COVID or any of this shit.
I don't like Alex bringing up India on his show just because... it's so vast and complicated that even if he studied it in real terms, he would be completely and woefully incapable of talking about it.
And the dynamics with the coal supply in that region of the world. There's some talk of like more coal-related issues in the present day, but there's also reports that the coal stock is fine. It's actually kind of hard to tell what the situation is, but I can find no evidence of the claims that Alex is making about India. And right. Then with Italy, it's not the same thing that Alex is saying, but you know, it is a decree that you got to keep your temperature in these lines. It's like
right.
It's like having a dad in your house who's worried about the thermostat.
Put a sweater on.
Right.
I mean, you know, but that's really more of like that's like a government saying, hey, we're all in this together. You know, we've chosen this path forward
right.
as a team. And so we're also going to have to deal with the consequences as a team.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And I can't fully understand how you would go about, like, do they have inspectors
yeah,
coming in with thermometers?
Course.
Or
of course. But, I mean, that's the point. Is like, this is not something we're going to come into your home. But we are doing a thing in support of Ukraine.
Yep. And I don't know. So I guess the world is going to lose this kind of just
stuff.
Great commentary.
Oh, no.
Anyway, it should have been easy, this whole thing.
Yeah.
Defeating the globalists.
I mean, we've been doing it for 20 years.
It should be very easy to defeat if we're able to model it, break it down, chronicle it, and then get leaders who are compartmentalized to wake up. It could have been stopped. But now the collapse is unfolding. And so now it's even more desperate that we warn everybody so they understand that those initiating the collapse and admitting they're doing it in their white papers are now the ones that are going to preside over the crisis and pose as the savior and just put out the cover story to the dumbed-down public, to the very simplistic public, to the one-dimensional public. Oh, there's deadly viruses because of global warming. Oh, there's collapse of the food chain because of global warming. Oh, we've got to do all this because of you're bad. Humans are bad. And then they have the organized, collapsed depopulation and total transhumanist takeover of whoever's left at the end of that beyond dystopic system that they have initiated.
Nothing in that clip has any relationship to reality. It's all just Alex expressing his feelings of preemptive distrust about world events that haven't even happened yet, and may not. In the real world, there are very complete explanations for how changing climate has severe consequences in terms of famines and droughts. So if there is a drought, scientists can say it was caused by climate change, and Alex can say it's a giant conspiracy proven by imaginary white papers, and then we reach an impasse.
Yep.
As for the new, like, exotic illnesses, it's super clear the role climate change has on that, with animal habitats being altered, causing them to migrate to new areas, and increasing the likelihood that they make contact with people where they wouldn't have otherwise. This necessarily increases the odds that new viruses and bacteria can be exchanged, and from there, the potential for new outbreaks goes up. Alex can sell his audience on his explanations for everything, because his explanation for everything is the same. It's all the globalists. They're doing everything, and it's totally definitively proven in this document that Alex refuses to speak specifically about, almost as if it doesn't exist, and Alex doesn't want the audience to realize he's making all this shit up. This is the same sort of dynamic he has with, like, the prospect of climate refugees.
Yeah.
You know, it's a preemptive explanation that, it's all just the globalists, it's a conspiracy to attack all of us. And there are just these things that are likely outcomes of the trends that we're seeing with the climate.
Right.
Whether it's a change in the amount of usable land that we have for farming or the likelihood of encountering species that could introduce new viruses and bacteria to
for sure.
us. These are real things. He's created a preemptive excuse where it's all a conspiracy and it's all bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with the preemptive is that most of this stuff is currently happening. You know, like, this is not stuff this used to be the trends that you would talk about coming in the near future or, you know, short-term
sure.
future, and it's fucking here. So he's denying something that he can look outside and see.
In a fashion, it's happening.
Yeah.
But it probably will be happening much more severely in a way that impacts people much more who are in his audience.
Yes.
In the future.
True.
That's kind of what I mean by that.
Fair.
But I do agree. Your point is well taken. That is a fair point.
Mm.
So, Alex, just... just rambling about extermination, how we're all going to die. You know, it's...
We are on it today, huh?
It's on his mind.
Wow.
It's always on his mind.
They write the articles all over the controlled corporate press about looking forward to The End of Humanity in the Wall Street Journal, NBC News, the Times of London. That's why they have articles everywhere saying we need dictatorship. We need authoritarianism.
Tons of articles.
We're going to sexualize your children. This is a coming out of evil. This is hundreds of years of preparation and waiting and training and building their networks while they were rich and powerful presiding over humanity. And now that we're entering the genesis of our next level, super technology, life extension, secrets of the universe, they want to dumb everybody down further, kill everybody, so that the general public does not have access to this because they know time and time again, out of the mass of the public, which on average is simple and dumbed down, super geniuses come out of those groups that innovate and always overthrow the previous elites. Then they become decadent generationally, and the cycle continues.
So now the story is that the globalists don't want all of us in the cheap seats getting our hands on life extension technology, and they're going to need to kill off all the population because from the multitudes of the stupid masses, they fear that a super genius will arise to take down their system. And I'm going to guess right now that Alex thinks he's that super genius.
I would say that's a pretty good guess.
Either way, none of this means anything. And I just want to touch on the articles that Alex mentioned at the top of the clip. The first is that op-ed that Alex hasn't read but likes to say the title, and the other has to do with dictators. This is Alex referencing an op-ed in Bloomberg titled, "To Save Democracy, We Need a Few Good Dictators." This was written by Robert Kaplan, and if Alex knew anything about him, he'd know that Kaplan has been saying shit like this for over a decade. Just a quick Google search turned up an article that he wrote in 2012 for Stratford named Good Mideast Dictators. Kaplan isn't calling for a dictatorship in the United States. His point is specifically about less developed countries and how oftentimes for citizens in those countries, the democratic process is less important than achieving fundamental rights and things that can be achieved within the context of greater stability.
Right.
I think a lot of his points are half-cooked at best, but Alex is absolutely misusing the headline of this opinion piece that he definitely didn't read so he can use it for his own purposes.
Right.
Which is his MO.
Yeah. I mean, if I remember Kaplan, I've read some of that crap, and it's essentially like his shitty argument is like, right now dictatorships are bad, that we want to get them towards a democratic system, so we need some sort of philosopher king to bridge the gap between dictator and democracy.
I'm not sure. I haven't read all of his articles, but the sense that I got was, generally speaking, that like a functioning democracy can grow out of stability and a strong institutional base. But that is something that a lot of developing countries don't generally have when democracies are attempted.
Right.
And so I think that how he would put it is that a dictatorship would allow these countries to solidify, create better institutions, and then from there go into a democracy.
Right.
I don't know if I agree with this. I don't know, but it's not the point that Alex is trying to make it out to be.
No.
And it was an op-ed.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it was a bad one.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But Alex has his hand on the pulse. He knows about things.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean.
Like what?
Well, those headlines, for instance.
Does he?
Yep. And and other terms. And history.
No.
Super geniuses come out of those groups that innovate and always overthrow the previous elites. Then they become decadent generationally and the cycle continues. The globalists call this, and Obama talks about it, the end of history.
What?
Where there's a corporate total control over biological reproduction, over your mind, surveilling everything you do, so that the human system as we know it is ended. Because the Carnegie Endowment that runs the CIA today, at the end of World War One,
I'm sorry, what?
Nations was given the charter to end war. And the answer was end men and women, end the family, end all of human competition, and create a corporate, medical, biomedical tyranny over the public where humans are produced that are even allowed to live, that are not purely human but are chimeric species, corporately owned. And you see that, of course, in Brave New World, published in 1931. The brother of Huxley, Julian Huxley, Aldous Huxley's brother, goes on to create the UN, run the UN for two decades, create the transhumanist movement, launch the Tavistock Institute, the transgender system, all of it. And this is it.
Alex is just talking out of his ass here, trying to grasp at whatever straws he thinks he can pull to sound like he's making a real point. First problem is that he has no idea what the end of history refers to. That term comes from a book written in 1992 by Francis Fukuyama. The central thesis of the book is that no political philosophy is better than liberal democracy, and that all human history is bending toward a greater number of people in the world living under liberal democracies. Hmm. The end of history is the state when all countries are democracies.
Sure.
Rightly so, since 1992, the book has been criticized as being very naive, and the current world would seem to concur.
Yeah.
Alex has no idea what he's talking about.
Nope.
The rest of that clip may as well have just been word salad, with Alex just free associating as best as he can, but there's a few quick points I want to bring up. One, the Carnegie Endowment doesn't run the CIA.
Ah, now I'm confused.
Two, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace did not decide to end war by ending men and women and the family and all that shit.
Oof.
Carnegie was actually also a fan of competition. Alex is confusing him with John D. Rockefeller, who said competition is a sin. Three, the Carnegie Endowment didn't propose making the plot of Brave New World into a reality. Four, Julian Huxley didn't found the UN. He was the first Secretary General of the United Nations Educational and Scientific Organization, or UNESCO, a position he was in for 2 years, not 20.
Yeah.
Five, Julian Huxley didn't found the Tavistock Institute. Six, Alex is confusing the Tavistock Institute and the Tavistock Clinic. The clinic has a history of being involved in providing health care surrounding trans issues, whereas the Tavistock Institute is the center of a ton of dumb conspiracy theories. The Institute is involved in research and projects largely relating to social sciences, so people have connected them to pretty much every conspiracy you can come up with. When the Institute spun off from the clinic in 1947, the clinic remained as part of the NHS. Those are six massive problems of the fun conspiracy that Alex is just riffing out on the show, but if you're just passively listening to this and thinking Alex knows what he's talking about, it sounds like this guy really has put the pieces together, but it's total bullshit.
I was listening to that, and I was like, keeping count. That was like a greatest hits in one sentence of the things that even I remember as being like, the moment he said Tavistock, I was like, nope, he got it wrong again, every time.
Yeah.
Till the day we die, he's not going to understand Tavistock.
Yeah, and like, he didn't even get the Carnegie Endowment, like, involvement after World War One conspiracy correct. Because largely, the conspiracy is that they decided that war was a preferable state and perpetual war. And
okay.
So that's why they made World War II happen.
Right. That's the
conspiracy theory that like exists largely. Alex is inverting that entire thing.
Conspiracy theories are very useful when you can make them up on the fly and don't need anybody to fact check you.
My man, that's why they exist.
That is, that's true.
Yeah. So anyway, Alex goes out to break on a grim note.
I want to get into the current collapse mechanisms that are taking place and then the different pieces of how they're trying to outlaw dissent and silence any opposition ahead of this takeover. But if we expose the globalist agenda and the WEF's agenda, then they're not going to get away with their final goal of using this collapse to totally depopulate and enslave us forever. It'll be their Waterloo and a new awakening and renaissance. We must fight this.
You trust your mother, right?
Oops. Left a little commercial there accidentally. I guess it is kind of stoppable, but I mean, the way he's still presenting this is like, yeah, we're all going to die, but if we do the right things afterwards,
yeah,
we'll be fine. The survivors will be able to...
Right. He's Harry Seldon pulling some foundation bullshit on us, and the collapse will only be 1,000 years instead of the 10,000 that has been prescribed.
I should be also clear.
Yeah.
This is the first segment still.
Yeah, we're still in first segment.
This is up till like 14 minutes into the show.
Jesus Christ.
He is in a mood and it is upsetting.
God damn it, Dan. I'm feeling upset about his mood so far.
Yeah.
It's really changed. We were talking fine before the show started. Now I'm getting infected with it.
Yeah. That's the gift of his oratory skills.
Well, it's been a long 14 minutes.
Yeah. So, Alex comes back from break, and by that I mean Alex doesn't come back from break.
Oh, smart. Very smart.
He's not there.
Smart.
And instead, he's playing a clip of Tucker Carlson interviewing Alex's former employee, Savannah Hernandez.
Oh, boy.
And I found a couple things kind of interesting about this clip, so I'm going to play a little bit of it.
Maybe I didn't hold you.
Interesting. What did you think of Alex Jones?
Loved him to death. I still talk to him to this day. I think that he's great. And I think that many more people should have been vocal when he was initially banned. Because I was actually there. I remember
on a fishing trip that day. I was in Labrador, and I've regretted it ever since that I didn't come out of the box. I wasn't there.
Wow, you are dead, Tucker. 90% of the world's population is dead, especially you, because patriots are fucking dead. That's why Alex should still be on the air. That's why I should still be on Twitter.
Don't you think it's so funny, though, yeah, I didn't support him because I was fishing that
yep,
day.
Yep.
What about the next day?
Nope,
dumb?
By then it was too late. By then it was too late.
Ooh, yeah, I was on a boat that
so
day.
So close.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was tragic.
I do love that. So I think that all of Alex's employees, with the exception of maybe David Knight, he seemed to know some things.
Sure.
He was wrong about a lot of stuff, but he seemed like he knew some things.
Sure.
Pretty much everybody else that Alex has hired has been drastically unqualified.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them won contests and ended up working there.
True.
Owen Schroyer bullied people at rallies
and
yelled at them and then edited videos of himself doing that. And also that great demo tape.
Some people just make dank memes for him.
Sure. Count Dankula? Was it Carpe Donctum? So Savannah is talking to Tucker, and I think that she reveals that she was dreadfully unqualified.
Uh-oh.
I really didn't have an introduction into politics, but I had learned a lot of, things from Alex Jones up front, and everything that he was telling me was not false. The people who condemn him and say that he's a crazy conspiracy theorist do not listen to his show every single day, because I worked for him for 2.5 years. I didn't know the three branches of government when I started.
That's going to be, I think, probably a deal breaker.
Yeah.
If I'm running a news and political themed thing, I would be like, well, maybe learn a little bit more and reapply.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you can handle this. But I think for Alex, it's actually perfect because she then knows so little that you get to inform all of her opinions and ideas about what is real and what is not.
I think Alex specifically hires tabula rasas, if you will.
Yeah.
I think it would
have been, I think it would have been an interesting follow-up question to for Tucker to ask, what do you think the three branches of government are now?
I was going to say, that's what the first thought I had was, are you sure you still do?
The deep state?
Yeah.
The patriots?
Exactly. That tree of liberty? That's got to be one of them.
The rhinos?
No, the branches are on the tree of liberty. God damn it.
So one more clip from this Tucker thing. So Savannah is talking about why no one defended Alex when he was getting kicked off everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just so fucking funny.
Why do you think, I've already said why I didn't defend Alex Jones the day he was deplatformed. I wasn't in the country.
It was fishing.
But why do you think that more in conservative media didn't take a principled stand against censorship when that happened?
Because Alex was off limits. Look at the fact that right now, Tucker, so many in conservative media who wouldn't even mention Alex Jones's name now say his name on a regular basis. Oh, Alex Jones is right. Alex Jones is right. We see this constantly, okay? The people in the conservative media or in the right wing even will not latch onto a specific narrative or tell the truth until it goes mainstream and they're allowed to do it.
So even in the conservative and right wing faction,
the reason why we lose is because we continue to wait for the left, the liberal media, the mainstream media to allow us to tell us when we are allowed to tell the truth.
She's talking about Tucker. That's what Tucker did.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly.
Yep. 100% exactly what Tucker did.
He might have been slightly ahead of some other folks, but some people still aren't.
I mean, what I would have said very clearly is just, hey, Tucker, you've had plenty of InfoWars employees on your show in the past few years since Alex has been kicked off.
Why haven't
you referenced them as InfoWars under their credits?
Well, not really. I mean,
he's had like three, right?
I don't know. I mean, he said Savannah Hernandez.
Right.
He played that video of Harrison, but he didn't have him on.
He didn't have him on. Right.
I don't know. Yeah, I imagine Rambo Joe Biggs might have showed up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But again, he hasn't pulled all this stuff and been like, directly from InfoWars, my buddy, you know.
Yeah.
He's very clearly
seems like it should be the easiest thing in the world.
I mean, it's their main credit.
Right. But also, I think that an argument could be made so you're arguing perhaps that maybe he should have had Alex on himself. why not?
I'm arguing that it's telling that he wouldn't reference them as being InfoWars employees,
or
because they'll be taken more seriously.
Or have Alex on himself.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, the reason I think he doesn't have Alex on himself is that maybe he realizes that that would be a disservice to trying to rehab Alex's image.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Having Alex actually on probably would hurt the cause.
Absolutely. Alex, these people all have these very major and obvious criticisms of you. What's your response?
Alex,
I'm going to do all of those things.
Alex has a lampshade on his head yelling about demons.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's why you got banned.
Yeah.
Now I got
it. They also play a clip of Mike Tyson on Rogan talking about how Alex is right about stuff. And then Mike Tyson starts talking about how he's convinced that somewhere in the world, rich people are hunting poor people for sport.
Well.
Which Alex didn't. Really, I don't know if that's one of his big issues, but
I mean, you know, the plot of The Most Dangerous Game is a very easy one to just transpose into real life.
It's been in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Particularly one that the right wing got really upset about not too long ago.
They did.
So Alex comes back and he's introspective.
And so my great frustration is this. If you go back to shows we did 28 years ago, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, we talked about the plan to take over the infrastructure, to slowly destroy civilization, and to create a global collapse crisis out of which the one world government would take over. Now, I don't deserve credit for knowing that.
No, you don't.
This is a fairly generous way to sum up Alex's career, and I will grant that these are all themes that he's fiddled with throughout his time on air, but I have some serious problems with how this is being discussed. The first is that he's being so vague as to render what he's saying meaningless. You could define anything as slowly destroying society and then give yourself an unearned pat on the back. The second problem is more serious, and that is that Alex didn't say that the globalists are trying to orchestrate a collapse for the past 28 years. He said that specific things that have happened were the globalists trying to orchestrate a collapse that never came, over and over and over. Every year was the summer of rage. Back when Alex was hawking Ted Anderson's gold, every single comment from the Fed and every geopolitical issue was proof that the globalists are about to crash the dollar, so you should probably buy some gold. In the time Alex has been on air, there have even been actual collapses, and we've recovered from them, which shouldn't have happened if they were truly the globalist plots to bring in their one-world government. After 2008, 2009, it should have been over, and yet it wasn't.
No.
Alex isn't right, and he's never been right. The only way to make him seem right is to take his statements completely out of context and deprive them of the meaning in which he said them.
Yeah. Authorial intent is no longer as important towards critical theory. However, in terms of finding out whether Alex is full of bullshit, yeah, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This clip here, where he's talking about how he doesn't deserve credit for the revelations he's had throughout his career, is a way for him to weave into getting into some of his major sources throughout his career. And I'm going to take them one by one, because I think it's a pretty shocking list. And Alex definitely wouldn't cop to some of this at other points in his career.
Ooh.
This seems like a bit of a reveal. So here's the first one.
Okay.
I don't deserve credit for knowing that. John Coleman was high-level MI6. He came out with the plan 30-plus years ago.
So John Coleman is not a name that you hear Alex throw around much, and maybe part of that would have to do with the fact that Alex would sound a bit crazy if he did.
Mm.
Coleman wrote a book in 1992 called Conspirators' Hierarchy, The Story of the Committee of 300. I can find no evidence that he's actually former MI6, and given the track record of people who we run into from this show, I don't accept lofty resumes without some sort of verification. It's possible that he was actually an agent, and I'll assume it is true because I don't care to fight on
it. I mean, you know what's crazy? He was also a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
He was also fought in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
He's a decorated vet.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I decided to take a little look at this book, and immediately I had some problems.
Ooh.
In the introduction, Coleman is explaining that he came to the United States in 1969, and no one knew about all these secret societies that he was talking about, so he put out a little tape to educate folks. Then people started dropping all these names that, they knew shit about the Venetian black nobility. They didn't know anything about them. This leads him to say, quote, I consoled myself with the thought that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I pursued my investigations, pressing on in the face of severe risks, attacks on myself and my wife, financial losses, continual harassment, threats, and calumny. All part of a carefully crafted and orchestrated program to discredit me, run by government agents and informers, embedded in the so-called Christian right wing, the identity movement, and right-wing patriotic groups. These agents operated and still operate under cover of strong and fearless outspoken opposition to Judaism, their main enemy, they would have us believe. So if I understand correctly, these agents were sent into Christian identity movement type groups to discredit Coleman, and they maintained their cover by being really anti-Semitic so they would fit in.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah. False flag.
Coleman goes on to explain who these folks were.
Oh, boy.
Quote, these agent informers are led and controlled by a group of homosexuals who are well-liked and well-respected by political and religious conservatives all across the United States.
Wait, so these hidden people are undercover anti-Semites who are actually...
Well, they're not actually anti-Semites. They're doing that to protect their cover.
To protect their cover. Yes. But they're actually part of the... I mean, like, gay agenda or whatever it is.
Well, I'm not sure if he's saying that they themselves are gay, but they're, yes, they work for well-liked and well-respected homosexuals.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
So this group is a sprawling tome of bullshit. At one point, Coleman claims that the Tavistock Institute created the Beatles in order to introduce destructive ideas into American culture, such as the words cool and teenager.
That does sound true.
They achieved this by using 12 atonal music systems, quote, taken from the music of the cult of Dionysus and the ball priesthood of Adorno.
That does explain why the Beatles got popular, because they weren't that good, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was looking over his references page in his book, and I noticed a strange quote he was taking from an H.G. Wells book that seemed to be kind of foundational in terms of his argument that this committee of 300 had plans to kill everyone. Coleman writes, quote, in this work, Wells describes how the New World Order, which he calls the New Republic, useless eaters, excess population will be getting rid of. So, you know, they're going to kill off everybody.
Sure.
He cites this as coming from The Open Conspiracy, but it actually comes from another book altogether. It's from the book Anticipations, which doesn't have quite as useful of a title. The premise of Anticipations is Wells dealing with, like, future predictions. Like, one of the big ones is the invention and proliferation of the automobile, and he predicts some stuff in this book, like, that we're going to build a ton of roads, and that cities will become more distributed, basically what we now call the suburbs. Yeah. Some of it's pretty, like, you're right
good
on.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good work, HG.
Unfortunately, the last chapter veers heavily into territory of eugenics.
There we go.
This sentence is particularly not great.
Uh-oh.
Quote, they will hold, I anticipate, that a certain portion of the population, a small minority, for example, afflicted with indisputably transmittable diseases, with transmissible mental disorders, such as the hideous incurable habits of mind as the craving for intoxication, they exist only on sufferance, out of pity and patience, and on the understanding that they do not propagate. And I don't foresee any reason to suppose that they will hesitate to kill when that sufferance is abused.
God damn it, HG. Paul F. Tompkins, come get your boy. All right?
Yeah.
Sick of this.
There is no way around this. That chapter is horrible. So horrible, in fact, that within a few years of writing the book, Wells was arguing against these positions.
Yeah. Smart move.
This was published in 1901 and could be argued to be his first book of this sort. And it's really only just a few years after he published War of the Worlds. None of this makes these positions in the text okay or any better, but it's disingenuous to characterize Wells' entire career based on this.
Right.
I bring this up because this is a huge knock on Coleman's book. A giant part of the whole conspiracy thing is that H.G. Wells' book proves that the elites plan to kill everyone off, and he gets the book wrong. And it's not just in the reference pages. When he's talking about the Committee of 300, he says, quote, it strives toward a one-world government, rather well described by one of its late members, H.G. Wells, in his work commissioned by the committee, which Wells boldly called the Open Conspiracy.
Did King Leonidas call for that himself?
I do believe that it harkens to that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's very clear.
The Committee of 300 also called themselves the Olympians.
Yeah. There we go. There it was. Yeah.
So the Open Conspiracy has a better name, and it was written 27 years later when Wells was in full swing in his philosophy career. So it seems worse that he would be writing that kind of shit at that point. And I think that's part of this.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, Coleman does something really sneaky, though, in the text. He's established a pattern of presenting quotes from other texts in italics. So he includes a mostly benign passage from Wells, then says, quote, like George Orwell's 1984, Wells's account is a mass appeal for a one-world government. Summarized, the intent and purpose of the Committee of 300 is to bring to pass the following conditions. After this point, there are 3.5 full pages of italic text, which is obviously meant to give the appearance that this is something that Wells had written.
Right, 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 right.
And you can see this misrepresentation paying dividends to this day. Some Great Reset conspiracy theory memes have reused part of this passage, some attributing it to Klaus Schwab and others to H.G. Wells. But in reality, it's just something Coleman tried to pass off as a quotation by making it up himself and presenting it in italics.
That's cheating!
It is.
That's cheating!
Yep, the passage is as follows. Quote, at least 4 billion useless eaters shall be eliminated by the year 2050 by means of limited wars, organized epidemics of fatal rapid-acting diseases and starvation. Energy, food, and water shall be kept at subsistence levels for the non-elite, starting with the white populations of Western Europe and North America, and then spreading to other races. The population of Canada, Western Europe, and United States will be decimated more rapidly than on other continents until the world's population reaches a manageable level of 1 billion, with 500 million will consist of Chinese and Japanese races, selected because they are people who have been regimented for centuries and who are accustomed to obeying authority without question.
Really doesn't take much of a scratch to get to the racism under most, if not all, of these people.
Yeah, a lot of it's
just a tiny little scratch, and you're like, Jesus, oh my God, it's blood racism spurting everywhere.
Yeah, but this is an abuse of the way the information's presented.
Yeah.
And like you can trace it through misunderstandings and conspiracy bullshit since then.
I mean, you know, it is one of those things where it is so fascinating because we get to you find like the progenitor of these things and it fucks you up because you kind of don't think these things have a real beginning, you know, like they just kind of congeal, you know, like the first time I found out Dusty Baker invented the high five, it's like, that can't be real. It's only that old.
I have bad news.
What's that?
It was actually the Tavistock Institute.
No!
So
wait, wasn't it the Tavistock Clinic?
No.
Oh.
I don't know if he actually was the original progenitor of these ideas, but in his book, which is this revelation, and a lot of this traces back, like a lot of things, especially this H.G. Wells quotation being misused, it traces back to him, but he may have gotten it from some like newsletter or something.
Sure, well, yeah, that's fair.
That he read or some could other
be,
bullshit.
Could be Dash Anonymous.
I can't say that 100%, but yeah, this is a heavily influential thing that's totally full of shit.
Ugh.
Anyway, long story short, this book is full of shit, but you can definitely see how some of the ways that this has influenced Alex's worldview. Also, there's a weirdly long section about the killing of Aldo Moro, and Steve Pachanik doesn't come up at all, which I found offensive.
That's crazy!
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Ugh.
So, Alex's first source is a crazy asshole who also thinks you can get arrested in Canada if you dare try to expose the fact that Jews run the country.
Right.
I forgot to mention that earlier. It's in the book.
Yeah, you didn't need to mention that. Yeah. Generally speaking, if you... Yeah.
So, we're off to a good start.
Yeah.
In terms of his citations.
Yeah, yeah. Let's kick that guy into a giant hole and scream, this is Sparta.
Here's the next one.
General Parton was the head of Air Force Weapons Development and the secret space program. He told me all of this.
So according to his profile on the Air Force's website, Benton Parton was a, quote, deputy for systems, aeronautical systems division at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. In 1955, he did an exchange program with the Ballistics Research Laboratories, where he worked on an armament project, which led to him being assigned to the Air Weapons Directorate as a, quote, assistant for advanced weapons concepts. By 1970, he was the commander of the Air Force Armaments Laboratories, so there's definitely some truth that he had experience in this area and had a pretty good resume. That said, I can find no evidence that he was in any secret space program, but I guess if I could, then it wouldn't be so secret.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he's still alive and ripped as shit, so that would explain the whole secret.
Dead.
Oh, shit.
I think that the secret space program thing, Alex is mixing Parton up with General Stubblebein.
Yeah.
I think that he's conflating their... importance in terms of his
right.
Anyway, I have no idea what else Parton has told Alex, but his real claim to fame and main significance to the conspiracy world is that he insisted that the Oklahoma City bombing couldn't have been caused by McVeigh's bomb. He tried to present his evidence to a grand jury, and they were not impressed and said, no, thank you. All the same, he became a huge hero in the right-wing militia-type community because he lends an air of credibility to the theory that they need to be accepted to blame someone else for Timothy McVeigh's terrorism.
Yeah.
I've dabbled in Parton stuff, and I don't really take any of it very seriously, and I don't know how much he has to say outside of the OKC stuff, so this is a weird inclusion in the list, unless Alex is just trying to come up with the most credible-sounding people that he's been able to get to be on his show.
That has to be.
I guess.
I mean, I assume the next one is just Zach.
No. we pretend Zach didn't happen.
Oh, that's right. We pretend Zach didn't happen now.
That was fake news.
That was
fake
a good news. One. I liked Zach. Come on.
Here's the next one.
Okay.
High-level FBI agent Ted Gunderson told me everything.
Ted Gunderson was at one point in the FBI. Mm. However, he completely threw away his reputation by his insistence on fueling the fires of the Satanic Panic in general and the McMartin preschool case in specific.
Yeah.
We've gone over Ted a bit in the past, so I'm going to let this be a brief synopsis. Ted was a craven, opportunistic lunatic whose actions hurt countless people. And it makes sense that Alex is all reverent of him, though, since all Alex is doing is trying to profit off another satanic panic.
Yeah.
He's just trying to pull a Gunderson without having an impressive FBI resume to throw away doing it.
Yeah. I mean, in his situation, that's way better than Gunderson's. Mm-hmm. You know, he's fine. I mean, aside from the he's going to be sued into oblivion part.
Sure.
Yeah.
So here, those are the three references he's got so far.
I mean, a series of luminaries, each at the top of their field. They're yep. the highest, they're top experts.
And then the Band-Aid comes off.
Here we go.
And those men now, in hindsight, and the John Birch Society, got it 100% right. We stand on their shoulders. And there were so many other people. I'm getting chills right now.
What an absolute pile of shit coward Alex is. The reason he's getting chills is because he's finally just letting it out and expressing what he's believed all along, but tried to pretend he didn't. For most of his career, Alex pretended not to be into the John Birch Society because he knew damn well that if he said that he was so deeply inspired by them, he would be seen as a bircher and no one would take him seriously because people were aware of the John Birch Society and thought they were a bunch of assholes.
Yeah.
People also correctly knew that they were an extremely right-wing organization. There was no way to pretend to be above the left-right paradigm if everyone knew you were a bircher. That would essentially brand you accurately as a fringe right-wing figure, and then all the criticisms of people like Bush that you're making would be better understood for what they were.
Yeah.
Alex hid that stuff because it was important to his career and critical to him being taken at all seriously by anybody in the 90s. Now, most of the idiots mindlessly tweeting Alex Jones was right memes probably have no idea who the Birchers were or what they stood for, so it's pretty much safe for him to come clean.
Yep.
Alex has been pretty much mask off about his bigotry in the last few years, but this feels like an intellectual mask off kind of moment. He's giving it up to his icons, who are right about everything.
Yeah.
A fraud lunatic, an OKC bombing truther, a guy who ruined countless people's lives in the Satanic Panic, and the John Birch Society. What a loser.
Wow.
Also, to be clear, if Alex believes that the JBS was right about everything, that's basically him opening declaring his opposition to civil rights.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I mean, I think he was fairly open to that before, but if you say that you're a big fan of the John Birch Society and they were 100% right, you are also saying that we should live in a white male-dominated society purely of Protestant Christians.
And a lot of corporate interests yeah. ruling everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just baked in there. You know, you can't let rich people develop a far-right society.
Mm-hmm.
That'll get you in trouble.
So after giving it up, to the heroes.
Relatively speaking, in my world, Somali pirates of existence.
Alex brings up that he couldn't go on air last segment, and that's why he played those videos.
Mm.
He's
crying. He's weeping.
Might be a little bit of tears.
Might be a little weeping.
Well, a little soft tears.
A little soft.
But okay. He's in a mood.
Okay.
He's wants to say goodbye.
And so I knew that the world's elite were planning this, and I knew that if we warned people, we would have a chance to stop it. But I also thought about looking out into the future, what it would be like if we failed to stop the initiation of their final plan, what it would be like. And last segment, I couldn't even go on air. So I went ahead and aired some clips because this is like when I've had family members come to me and say, I love you a lot. And I really appreciate you. And I've got terminal cancer. And they say I'll be dead in 6 months. It's happened a couple times. and they smile at you and they tell you they love you, and then you're at their funeral and they're dead. And that's what this is. I'm here telling you that I'm going to die, you're going to die, we're all going to die. It's not like your grandma sitting there having a cup of coffee across the table from you, telling her that she's always going to love you and always going to be there, but that she's going to die. But life goes on through children and grandchildren, doesn't it? Except under this plan, it doesn't go on. So it's a death way worse.
Holy shit. This is bad. This is bad.
Oh,
Jordan,
God.
I don't know why you're laughing. This is terrible news.
I don't know. It's just so funny to me. Not least of which, because this is more like your grandma coming to you for every 6 months for the past 20 years saying, I'm going to be dead in 6 months.
Right.
I'm going to be dead in 6 months.
Doing it a ton. And then also conspicuously this time when it seems a little bit more severe than sometimes in the past, it coincides with her having a huge lawsuit that she's going to lose.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm going to be dead in 6 months. But what's important is now my narcissism has allowed me to finally cross that bridge and say, if I die, the world ends with me.
I mean, it is still just essentially projection of his own individual experience being forced onto his audience.
Yeah, it is a narcissistic view that like whatever is happening to me is happening to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And look, I mean, this... You know, since all of your children are going to die, your ancestral memories won't be carried on into the future or
really
whatever.
Bums me out.
It is. And and you know what? What's happening?
What?
All of the ancestors from the past are crying out.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
This
goes.
Is, yeah.
And my other grandmother saying, I want to go home to my family and God. I'm going to stop eating at 92. I'm ready to die. And you say, I understand. I respect your decision. But you know, they had a long life. They live on through you. And as long as you live on and your children live on and their children live on and we're good people, their life meant something. And if they cut us off like this in this incredibly ancient journey of our species, it is a crime never before committed on this planet that is just so unspeakable.
It's been committed a lot, actually.
All our ancestors cry out and all of my will cries out and just begs all of you to realize there's a trillion distractions, and they're all interesting and fun to cover. And all of this news is amazing, but it's all part and parcel of the spiritual fall of man and the spiritual battle we're in, and the fact that we're entering undoubtedly the end of days being initiated by the Antichrist forces, making the way for their transhumanist God. And so on my metaphysical knees, I beg you on my knees to realize that this is the truth. This is the transmission. This is the warning. This is why they fear us. This is why they hate me above anyone else. It's because I know their plan, and I was put in this position by God.
Okay. Chosen by God.
Yep.
Freaking me out.
I am calling for a 10-year moratorium on the end times. Nobody
great.
Can claim it's the end times for a decade.
Give it a fucking break.
Give it a just one decade.
Make us miss you.
Not once in my entire life has it not been the end times.
Yeah.
You know, just give me 10 years. Hey, frankly, maybe that's smart for you because that'll finally fucking happen if you shut up about it all the time.
In wrestling terms, the end times are overexposed.
Yeah. You got to go away to come back, baby.
Exactly. You might need to go and get a new gimmick.
Yes, absolutely.
Bring it back and we'll like it more.
Come back as Stone Cold. That's the way you do it.
Right.
Stone Cold Steve Revelations.
All right. You can't make it as stunning Steve Austin or the Ringmaster. You gotta go away, come back bald.
That's the way you do it.
So I guess the system hates Alex because God chose him to send this message of warning. This is again messed up.
Yeah.
Hey Tucker, what do you think about this?
I mean, wow. Just real sad.
See, it's interesting that like Savannah Hernandez will come on Tucker's show and say they hate Alex because he tells the truth and they're worried about how he is honest about things, whereas Alex's own version of it is the devil,
right,
as manifested by social media companies.
Naturally.
They're scared that he was chosen by God
to
destroy their plans, and that's why the system hates him.
I find it offensive that Cervana Hernandez... Actually, I find it offensive that anybody on this fucking planet can say that the problem that you have is that you don't watch Alex every day. Once you existed, that argument is gone across the world.
Well, I should be totally transparent about this.
I understand you don't watch it every day
anymore.
But we're past that.
Yeah. There have been long stretches where I would watch more than one episode a day, and I would watch him every day. And I still watch way more than is healthy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't bear the like boredom of watching every day.
No one should.
Yeah.
But you did your time is the point. You did a two stretch in solitary.
And I can can say pretty concretely that the problem isn't that
it's
people aren't watching
it
enough
of him. It is not that.
It's a load of shit.
How dare you?
Yep. So anyway, Alex was prepared to be this this voice from God. And he claims that he's been taught lesson after lesson after lesson. And I would suggest that based on my experience with him, one of the things he's worst at is learning lessons.
Yes.
He does not learn shit.
No.
Constantly makes similar mistakes.
Yeah.
And I was put in this position by God. None of it is me. And I was carried along lesson after lesson after lesson.
You should sue God.
Not at all.
Prepared for where we are, and you were prepared with your life lessons for where you are now to be a light in the world in this coming total darkness, so that we can not let Satan have his total victory in the end. Though the Bible tells us 1/4 of the earth will be killed before the plan is reversed. And it is going to be our action that will reverse that plan. And it's going to be rough, and it's going to be hard, and a lot of us aren't going to make it. But that's okay, because our spirits are eternal. But I want you to know that I love you, and I appreciate you.
That's abusive.
And I stand with you forever. And I know you stand with me.
So a quarter of the world is going to die, best case scenario.
Man, I'm telling you, it does not get more like, oh, that's how you were raised, than a half hour stretch of you're all going to die, everything's awful, but listen, I love you.
This is,
and you're
this
very
feels like an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a half hour.
Yeah.
Double
that's what
that
I'm saying.
Shit.
Yeah.
And let's fucking stop pretending. This is like a day and a half after he finished his money bomb.
Yeah.
This isn't like...
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Less than 48 hours after
really
the end of
point.
The money bomb. We just tried to raise $2 billion to keep it floors on air. Now we're all dead, and no matter what we do 6 months from now... Okay.
I think that's...
Refund these people's money, then, you asshole.
That's a great point. Yeah. It hadn't occurred to me to connect those two very specifically. If the world is going to end only 48 hours after a money bomb, the money bomb did not go well.
No, or conversely, it did go well. He got what he needed out of it.
Sure.
And then also got some...
Bad news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He paid off that $1 million sanction, probably, or at least recouped what he would owe.
Right.
And so now we're cooking.
Mm.
Anyway, the devil doesn't want us to go to space.
That's true.
And there are a lot of very twisted, very old forces that hate us because of our success and what we've already done throughout the cosmos, that are attempting to stop us here before this very important mission is launched. Now that mission is taking place in the third heaven.
What? Fuck off.
And I could not even try to describe to you that, just as they say, one cannot be told about the Matrix. You must see the devil's false construct. Well, it is even more intense to try to describe the next level.
So is Alex implying that the mission is to go to space so he can be reinforcements for a battle in heaven?
I guess.
It's kind of what it sounds like.
And, you know... That what's weird about this in my head is that the Hubble Space Telescope is almost completely aligned.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost perfect. Right now, they have sent back the most the highest resolution image, we can literally see in a photograph billions of years in the past. Billions, almost to the very beginning of the universe. Did you see a third heaven in there?
No, but why would you?
Well, that's fair.
So the use of the term third heaven is kind of on brand for Alex, actually. I don't know if you know that term. It's a little bit strange to hear, though.
I don't.
It's a term associated with the Church of Latter-day Saints, largely. And, you know, a lot of figures that Alex looks up to from the extreme right-wing anti-communism world were Mormons.
True.
Folks like the Skousen family, right. For instance.
Right.
There are references to the third heaven in extra-biblical texts, but also one in 2 Corinthians in the Bible. And the conventional understanding that usually is thrown around is that the first heaven is the sky, the second is space, and then the third is where the angels and God live.
Boo!
But it's pretty obscure terminology, so it's weird for Alex to be using it. Also, great to hear that Alex is reporting to his audience that there's a war going on in heaven.
There's never a moment's peace. Even that's the worst part. Even though he's been yelling at us all this time about how he's safe in God and everything's perfect, all of a sudden now I found out even when I die, I'm gonna have to go fight another fucking war. That's brutal.
Yeah.
This is a shit universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope he's wrong. I hope he's wrong.
I have great news for you.
Okay, good.
But even if he is right, don't be mad at God.
Okay.
If we are faithful and have courage and believe in God, God is going to give you the discernment and the blueprint and the download to defeat this. And that is the great solace we have. But we must not hate God for being angry that we were being put through this, because this is the experience of free will. This is the gift of consciousness and eternity, is that we must first, before we're given godlike power, face evil so that we know it and have physically, cellularly felt it, so that we will not be part of it in the future. This is a cleansing. This is a ritual God is going to put us through. This is our boot camp, and we will prevail. Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior.
So, I guess a quarter of the world dying is a cleansing ritual.
Yep.
Sweet.
Yep.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, wait. Is he for or against 90% of the population being...
Is it at least in favor, it seems, of a quarter dying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
maybe
seems 90's like...
90's too much.
It really does seem like God's plan and the globalist plan sooner or later start dovetailing together. Every time he starts revealing them.
It's what they call kind of like a continuum problem.
Right.
Huh? It's like one is too high, the other's too low. So right. There's got to be a sweet spot in the middle.
But you can never find the exact sweet spot.
40% of the world dying? Is that okay, Alex?
I don't know. Anything over 50 is unacceptable, obviously.
Well, if the globalists are to kill off a quarter of the population, then I guess that what Alex is describing is that's God's will. Like, they're carrying out God's will.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is just dumb.
Yep.
Anyway, now that everything changes.
Good. And now for something completely different.
Right, because the second hour starts and Roger Stone shows up.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. Fuck off.
So here's where we're at.
Okay.
As our mutual friend Tucker Carlson says, they don't act like people who have a lot of time. They act like people who are frantic to cancel the Constitution and our freedoms because they are running out of time. They know they're a minority. They know that we are the majority. They know people are waking up. They know InfoWars and frankspeech.com and a handful of others, Real America's Voice, Right Side Broadcasting. There's a very few patriotic outlets out there where the truth can still be heard, but the American people are waking up, and that's because of InfoWars.
I agree, and I want to tell the globalists, even if they can shut down OAN or you or I or anybody else, the public gets what's happened now, and that there's a foreign globalist pro-Chi-Com force destroying us. So even if they silence all of us, America's too far awake now. No matter what they pull or what they do, I don't see them getting out of this.
I agree with that, Alex.
Wait, so we can win now?
No, we were all going to die. No, he apologized and said sorry and said we were all going to die.
Yep.
And then he said he loved us.
Yep.
And now we're going to be fine.
Yep. My Roger's here now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This hurts so much.
Yeah. So Roger believes that, look, GOP can win whatever in the midterms.
Sure.
But the key The key
was the key.
Having some crazy people in there.
Well, yeah.
Some like real fringe lunatics.
Gotta have
Marjorie
some
Taylor Greene types.
She's got to be in
that's
there.
That's the key.
That is the key.
And because that's the key, you should not donate to the GOP.
People who voted for Joe Biden come up to me in public and say, what a mistake they made. So there is a red tide coming, but it's important that people understand that the election of a Republican majority in the House and the Senate will change nothing whatsoever. The key here is to have a subset of patriots in both houses. It could be 10 to 15 stout men and women in the House, as many as three or four in the Senate, who can use their leverage to change the agenda and save the country.
If I want you to stop, because what you're saying is the key to everything. The Republican establishment, the neocons are allied with the Democrat deep state, the permanent state, to shut down a populist movement that they fear that came through Trump, now DeSantis and others. And so the key here is realizing just getting Republicans elected is not a panacea. It's having those hardcore groups to blow the whistle, to bully pulpit, and expose what happens to be that key swing vote.
There's no question. So, and people who are still sending their money to the Republican National Committee or sending their money to the Republican Congressional Committee, the Senatorial Committee, please, folks, go to the Infowars site, send that contribution here, or send it to my legal defense fund.
Yeah, the Democrats aren't attacking the mainline Republicans. They're attacking us.
So, Alex, you know, I don't even understand. Like, why does margins of electoral, like, why does having a few people in there matter? This is unstoppable.
Oh, no, I think Roger Stone is right.
No, Roger is right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, for his worldview, yes.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, strategically, he's correct. Yeah. Having some crazy people in there in order to be blocks that the mainline party needs in order to get things done is the best way to force your agenda through.
Yeah.
And Roger does need fucking money for his legal fees.
There you go.
So, yes, he's coming from a place that makes coherent sense.
Right.
Alex does not, based on the rest of this show up till this point.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But, you know, here's what I'm aware of now, that hour by hour, whether or not we live or die, this is like Schrodinger's genocide.
No, I totally agree. And yeah. I also think that, like, I can't put this more bluntly than the experience of listening to this show, if you believe him, has got to be bewildering and threatening.
Painful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
You can't go through the emotional experience of what that first hour would have been to someone who believes him, and then the jarring arrival of Roger Stone, and it seems like nothing...
Everything's fine.
Nothing that was said earlier matters or was real. Now electoral victories are somehow relevant.
Again.
It's ridiculous.
Insane.
Anyway, Biden's going to be gone soon.
Sure.
So I predict that after the election, they themselves will enact the 25th Amendment and remove him. They will lionize him while they're doing it. This great statesman is just too ill to do the job. He gave 100% to his country, but now, because he's not well, we have to sideline him for his own good. Remember, it takes a majority of the cabinet plus the vice president under the 25th Amendment to remove Joe Biden.
So when does it happen?
Right after the election, almost immediately after the election.
So let's keep an eye on that.
Yeah. So who's going to be the new president this time?
Well, Kamala Harris, probably.
Sure. But I mean, that's boring for the globalists.
Well,
so we
got to
bring back Hillary, right?
No. So here's what's going to happen.
Okay.
Is Kamala Harris will become president.
Sure.
And then the speaker will be vice president, right?
No, that's not how that works.
No. They appoint a vice president, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be Hillary.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then Kamala will step down. Hillary will become president. And
right.
She'll bring in Satan.
And then Obama will be the king of hell because he's the...
Become a Muslim.
Islam. Yeah. He's like
he'll be a caliphate.
Yeah, exactly. Like, isn't that what we're...
And then all the senators will become dukes and duchesses.
Of course. Let's bring it all together, man.
Sure.
All in one.
Boo.
How many times have we heard that the president is going to be removed and replaced by the vice president?
And I mean, we got a real hard deadline on this one, so let's see what happens.
That's nice.
Anyway, Roger also thinks that Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the GOP, is not cutthroat enough.
Hmm?
He's not up to the task.
But we already have from McCarthy. There it is. He doesn't. He's not playing for keeps. This guy doesn't have the courage to be the speaker of the House and take the fight to the Democrats.
I'm not against gay people.
What?
he lives with Frank Luntz. Is he blackmailed? Is he like the wife of Frank Luntz, or is he the husband?
Oh boy. So yeah, that's where Alex's mind goes.
Wild.
Yeah. A lot of revealing sort of thought patterns here.
Wild.
Alex seems to be living in some kind of, like, he's trapped in those early days of anti-communism.
Yeah, when you could still be just be on out and out. Hey, man, if he's gay, we can probably blackmail him. That's probably how it's going to work.
Yeah.
You can be, no, you don't have to be anymore.
I saw you taking notes there.
I just think that Roger saying not playing for keeps is the most revealing statement that you could make. Because, yes, he's right. Kevin McCarthy is playing for an election.
Yeah.
Assuming that one can be won or lost.
Yes.
Roger Stone is playing for keeps.
Mm-hmm.
For no elections.
To keep the power.
Yes.
Forever.
Absolutely.
And I think a part of that also is the preemptive declaration that the election will be stolen.
Of course.
That's part of that playing for keeps.
Always.
And so here's Roger getting into that act.
Of course.
Obviously, the Democrats aren't going to let us have a free election. They already stole the last. They want to outlaw questioning election outcomes. What are you predicting for 2022?
My prediction is pretty, it's pretty dire. I'm predicting a new pandemic of some kind that begins in September. They will then use that pandemic as an excuse for lockdowns, but more precisely, they will rush through legislation which will be signed that says all voting has to be by mail because it's too dangerous for folks to go to polling places. It's too dangerous for them to actually show up on one day and vote. Here's the tip off, Alex. I don't think anybody voted for Macron.
Interesting. Interesting theory.
I don't think anybody voted for Macron.
Nobody.
Nobody.
It's got to be great to be someone on InfoWars because you can just improvise stuff and riff thoughts and call them predictions, and then there is no consequence when all of your predictions are shit.
Yep.
It's great.
I don't think it should be against the law to claim that an election is stolen. Of course not.
No.
I do think there should be stakes at this point.
Yes.
If you're going to claim that the election is stolen, you've got to have something that's hanging over your head if you're wrong.
Yeah, there should I don't know. I mean, like, let's take it to a place where the stakes are even just understood under the terms of, like, credibility.
You have to tattoo on your forehead, "I was wrong about the election being stolen." Forever. So if you do TV, then guess what? Everybody's going to see the first thing. I was wrong about the election being stolen.
I think I maybe I'm okay with that in a metaphorical sense. But yeah, there should be some sort of a the consequence is a broad term.
Yeah,
and I think that there should be some kind of like detriment to. But I think that's the same thing with like so much of the InfoWars stuff. Like,
right.
There should be 100 albatrosses around Alex's neck.
Totally.
Of all the failed nonsense bullshit that he's carrying around with him and pretending he never said.
That's
the same thing I'm sure will likely be the case with Roger.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. We need to turn the albatross from metaphorical to literal.
We need a lot
you
of birds.
You have to wear a shirt that says you are. There needs to be a public and constant reminder of what you are.
I think what you're getting at and what I'm getting at, too, is that like the reason that this is allowed to go on and they can get away with it is there's literally no accountability.
None.
And somehow that changing would be beneficial.
Yes. My ideas are probably not the best.
I mean, I think they'd work.
Well, the Scarlet Letter didn't work, quote unquote.
Define work.
That's a good point.
So anyway, earlier in the show, we heard Alex say that God chose him for this mission.
Yes, it did.
Now he's hedging things a little.
Ooh.
I'm not trying to sit up here and say I'm a revolutionary leader and I'm an important person. The globalists see me as that. And they see Donald Trump,
as does God,
and Roger apparently. Stone and a few others as that. So we are your champions. You are our champions that keep us in the fight. But when I tell you that this is big leagues and we're taking them on at point blank range and we don't back down, that's why they run stories saying, oh, we're backing down. We're coming into them because they know our power is that we haven't backed down. So I'm asking you, and I want to thank all the people that made donations at InfoWarsStore.com. Right there at the top, it says, be a sponsor, make a donation. I want to thank you and salute you. You are 1776 2.0. I want to encourage everybody to get T-shirts, books, films. Alex Jones was right. You name it at InfoWarsStore.com and X2.
Roger seems to have reinvigorated Alex's belief that tomorrow exists. because
I'm just so tired.
Yeah. It is exhausting.
They really do have a lot more energy than I do, apparently. Or it takes less energy to be full of shit than it does to figure out they're full of shit.
Yeah. I think trying to disentangle their nonsense is exhausting.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
This is a load of shit.
Absurd.
Anyway, Roger is basically expressing, he'll say that it's not support of Russia. but functionally
sure.
It is.
Sure, yes. Well, yeah.
And then Alex says something real weird.
My family members were mowed down by Russian tanks in Budapest in 1956. But if you're Alex Jones or you're Tucker Carlson or you're Roger Stone and you tell the truth about what's really happening in Ukraine, that Zelensky is an actor with a multi-million dollar condominium in Miami Beach, by the way.
And we're not against him that he was a gay porn star. It's just the fact they bribe him with that. They blackmail him.
He's an actor. He's playing the role of a president. This war is not about what they say it's about.
So this is a narrative that's based on a comedy sketch that Zelensky did back in his acting days that right-wing Putin stooge crowds have discovered, and they're pretending it's gay porn.
Right.
It's pretty telling that Alex is pushing this very stupid and false talking point, and it really illustrates how bad the information he passes on to his audience is. So this is the second time that he's used false or misleading information to claim that someone's gay and being blackmailed. Seems like more than should happen in a day.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Seems to be where his mind is going a bit. And I think that's...
Wow. God damn. If your ancestors are your race memory...
They're crying out.
And they are crying out because of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine that if I was Roger Stone's ancestor, who had been murdered by the Russians...
Right.
I would not be on board
with InfoWars. Oh.
Yeah. Or InfoWars.
Get out. Get out.
I'm just saying maybe they're crying out.
So the third hour is Roger and Alex hanging out with Bobby Barnes. Robert Barnes comes in to give some world analysis.
What a trio of shitbags.
Yes. And I don't care. I'm not interested at all. I listened to it and was bored. But he did say one thing that I just felt like I want to touch on.
One little component about the French elections today that, you know, Le Pen lost. There were some anomalies being reported out of the French elections, in particular, territories outside of the continental control. In other words, places like Martinique, Guadeloupe, et cetera. These places showed a 30 to 40 point swing from 2017 to 2022 in favor of Le Pen. Yet no place inside the continent on the continent in France showed any such similar swing.
Exactly. The few places where they weren't federally controlled, she won massively, but everywhere else she lost.
Exactly. And these were places that she lost by 50 points last time that she won. I mean, it's that kind of margin swing.
See, this is a fun game. Marine Le Pen did much better than expected in French territories outside the borders of France, like Guadeloupe, Martinique, and Reunion. In order to explain this, Barnes has decided to suggest that this is proof that Macron was able to steal the election in places inside France, but somehow wasn't able to affect the vote totals in these other territories.
It's too far away.
Using the exact same information and evidence, why not play the opposite game and craft a conspiracy that Le Pen was able to steal a lot more votes in these territories because they were outside of the country's borders? You could use the geographical distance to pretend that they must have shoddy ballot controls.
No, you're using a different point of view. No!
Right. I mean, it makes just as much sense. It's all arbitrary bullshit.
Yep.
The point here is that this conspiracy hinges on nothing, and the alternative conspiracy makes as much sense. Barnes is covering the story this way because Le Pen is an extreme right-wing figure who matches the model of a leader Barnes would want in the world, so regardless of how dumb the excuse is, every failing of such a leader needs to be explained by them getting screwed by some vast conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah.
In reality, Le Pen and Macron both lost in the first round of voting in these overseas territories to the far-left candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon, which helps inform the context of the later vote. There's one element of this that reflects the far right mobilizing some votes, but probably a much larger part of it is people in these territories not liking how things are going for them under Macron and voting against him as opposed to voting for Le Pen. It's a bit unpredicted, and political scientists who spoke to The Guardian were caught slightly off guard, but it also makes complete sense. People in these territories have different immediate concerns than folks in mainland France, and it makes sense that you might see slightly different voting patterns based on those immediate differences.
Well, I mean, it's not like Macron or the last president or the president before that or the president before that has really done much to make their lives a lot better, so sure. Fuck them.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way they, and their preferred candidate was going to try.
Presumably.
Yeah.
Or maybe Macron did rig all of the votes in France,
God
but
damn.
Somehow wasn't able to or forgot to do the overseas votes.
Maybe that's what happened. I love the idea that no one voted for Macron.
Right.
I want it.
Well, that's Roger's idea. Right. Barnes, a little more nuanced.
True.
But still
true. He's not willing
shit.
To take the big swing yet.
No. He needs to train under Steve.
Yeah.
So we come to the end of this, and man, I will say... I don't know what to think, honestly. Like, obviously, the second and third hours when Alex has people around, he's certainly in a much different mood.
Yeah.
But the first hour rings true to me in a way that a lot of times things don't. Because it is incessant. It goes on and on.
Yeah.
He doesn't storm off. He just doesn't start the second segment
yeah.
when he plays clips. It feels more like somebody who's actually in it, like, we're fucked.
Yeah, yeah. I personally don't appreciate being told I'm going to die by anybody. Mm. I mean, you know, like, I don't think it's fun. Generally speaking, it's been prior to some very negative outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other time, it was like, you know, it's a doctor. But what are you going to do?
But this is disorienting.
Yes.
And I'm interested to see where it goes. We're recording this on Tuesday, and I tuned into a little bit of his show today. And he was back in a down mood when he was talking alone.
Well, that's good.
He was responding to the news that Elon Musk had bought Twitter, and he was not convinced it was going to change much.
That's the first good analysis I think I've seen from him in a long, long time.
Yeah, he's like, maybe we'll get back on. We'll see. Still kind of morose. I don't know. I tend to believe that the first hour was him externalizing and projecting his own situation on the audience.
Yeah.
The legal situation that he's in is unstoppable at this point.
Yeah.
And so the globalist doom is unstoppable at this point. Once he had someone like Roger around and then Barnes, he could bounce off each other, and some of that gloom lifted for him, and he kind of forgot about his troubles.
Sure.
And got excited, riffing around about maybe some people are gay and blackmail.
Right. No, when I'm on my down state and I'm left alone with my thoughts, that's the worst time to be left alone with my thoughts. I'm grateful that I don't have a radio show that I have to do so I can project them onto everybody.
Filling an hour of telling everyone they're going to die.
It's so great. Yeah. Every time. I'm always like, thank God I'm not telling everybody they're going to die right now.
The bottom line that I would say, and like regardless of what the explanation for any of this stuff is, the central thing is this is fucking irresponsible.
Yeah.
You can't do shit like this.
No,
you can't. Because he's not saying these kind of things as like abstract possibilities. He's saying this can't be stopped within a few years.
8 years.
At least a quarter of the world will be dead.
Yep.
Because of the globalist plans that again cannot be stopped.
Right.
And then dicking around about like trivial electoral politics and who Trump is going to endorse the next hour. It's inappropriate. This is just bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a little bit like, hey, everybody, you're going to die. All right, now let's get to the Kardashians lawsuit. And you're like, okay, all right.
And you should take this lawsuit very seriously.
Very seriously.
Yeah.
It's very important to saving us from 90% dead or whatever.
Yeah.
Gugh.
I'm interested to see what comes of this, but it may be nothing, or, hey, maybe Alex will be off air.
We'll see.
Who knows?
Let's hope.
I don't have a whole lot of faith in making that prediction based on my years of hearing him say doom and gloom stuff. But again, there is something that feels different about this. But who knows? Maybe that's just me overthinking. Anyway, we'll be back and we'll see if Alex is correct. But until then, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep, we're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
Yep, we'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'd like to wish you all a happy, dreamy, creamy summer.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.